Okay, so now we are beginning the next part of the lesson, which is Talmud Esel Sfirot, Part 1, Histaklut Pnimit. Histaklut Pnimit, Item 9. Before we begin with Histaklut Pnimit, a few words about the intention. That's item 155 from the introduction to Talmud Esel Sfirot. Accordingly, we must ask, why did Kabbalists obligate each person to study the wisdom of Kabbalah? Indeed, there is a weighty thing here, worthy of being publicized, that there is a magnificent, invaluable remedy to those who study the wisdom of Kabbalah. Although they do not understand what they are learning, but through the yearning and the great desire to understand what they are learning, they awaken upon themselves the lights that surround their souls. Now, Histaklut Pnimit of Talmud Esel Sfirot, Part 1, Item 9. The issue of the Tzimtzum explains how an incomplete operation came about from a perfect operator. The Rav elaborated in the matter of the Tzimtzum in the first chapters of this book. For it is a most serious matter. That is because it is necessary that all the corruptions and all the various shortcomings extend and come from Him. It is written, I form the lights and create darkness, but the corruptions and the darkness are completely opposite to Him. So how can they stem from one another? Also, how can they come together with the lights, with the O, and the pleasure in the thought of creation? We cannot say that they are two separate thoughts, God forbid, that we should even think that. Thus, how does all that come from Him down to this world, which is so filled with scum, torment, and filth, and how do they exist under a single thought? So, how could incomplete operations stem from complete operations to the point that He creates them and fills them, sustains them, and nurtures them, and makes sure that they do not disappear? We're talking about the system of the klipa, the tuma, the contradicting forces to the Creator. Why they exist and how? Because they exist because they are helped by Him, because He wants them to. So how can it be that from the same desire, from the same one root and thought, completely contradicting systems come, good and bad, yes and no, true and false, light and darkness, how can they come from one origin? If we say it's the unique, genuine source, it doesn't sit with our mind. It doesn't fit in there. Right, okay, so let's see how they could be together. Chapter 2, explaining the thought of creation. Item 10. Now we shall come to clarify the thought of creation. It is certainly the act ends in the preliminary thought. Even in corporeal humans, with their many thoughts, the act ends in the preliminary thought. For example, when one builds one's house, we understand that the first thought in this engagement is the shape of the house to dwell in. Therefore, it is preceded by many thoughts and operations until this shape that one had pre-designed is completed. This shape is This shape is what appears at the end of all his operations. Thus, the act ended in the preliminary thoughts. The final act, which is the axis and the purpose for which they were all created, is to delight his creatures. It is known that his thoughts ends and acts immediately, for he is not a human who is obligated to act, but the thought itself completes the entire act at once. Hence, we can see that as soon as he thought of creation to delight his creatures, this all immediately extended and expanded from him in the full measure and form of the pleasure that he contemplated. It is all included in that thought which we call the thought of creation. And examine that in depth. Know that we denominate this thought of creation by the name Ein Sof. That is because we do not have a single word and uttering in his Atzmut to define him by any name. The same thought of creation to delight his creatures, which came from one source, from one thought, is what necessitates to have a situation at a time of corruption and a time of correction in the second situation, to have a system of olamot, worlds, de tumah, impure worlds. Tumah is impurity, and olamot de kedusha, kedusha is purity or holiness. So olamot are worlds, olamot de kedusha, pure worlds. Two contradicting systems, and one soul is will begin from a certain point and will evolve between these two systems. The thought of creation itself necessitates that in order to give one a possibility for free choice. When one is between these two opposite forces, the good force and the bad force, so to speak, he's left here with the middle third of Tiferet, Klipat Noga, it's a free Kli, it's his free Kli. So he can take bad and good from these two forces. The good will be the intention, and the bad will be the will to receive, and build from them correctly a Kli. From the good, he takes the Masach, the screen. From the bad, he takes the Kli, and that creates in him a corrected Kli, ready for spirituality, at which time he performs this act here of receiving the light in order to bestow, and thus fulfills his Kli. And he receives more and more good and more bad together, and thus corrects himself until he reaches his purpose. So the thought of creation necessitates the second situation to have kelim that are incorporated of two opposite attributes. The creator must create this opposite system in order to give us to make us independent of him, not captured by him. not subordinate to him. Because had only the force of the Creator been revealed, we would be like angels. Had only the force of the creature appeared, we would also be slaves, servants. We already said that in our ten sefirot, we have Keter Chochma Bina, Chesed Gvura, and then the upper third of Tiferet, the middle third of Tiferet, and the lower third of Tiferet, and after that we have Netzachot, Yisod Malchut. So what the primary thing that's in us is the middle third of Tiferet, and here is where we have the choice. In order to give us a room for choice, the Creator on the one hand gives us his forces, yes, that's called Kedusha, sanctity, purity. On the other hand, he gives us our natural forces, which are called Klipa, the shell. And we are between the two systems. Here in the duration of time. And then we can always find a point that is independent of the Creator, from the perspective of him giving the light and the Kli that gives. Because our will to receive is controlled by him and the light is controlled by him. So both good and bad are controlled by him. So where can I be? Right in the middle. If I choose a state where I'm not dependent on him, not in my kelim, or I'm not dependent on his good influence, that's how I build myself. That's called building myself in the middle line. That's how we build ourselves. When we begin to ascend to the spiritual world, we have the left line. That's the system of impurity. And the right line, that's the system of purity or Kedusha, or as I drew it here, Kedusha and Klipa. Here it is Kedusha and Klipa. Here it is Klipa, Kedusha and Klipa. The same, but just different drawings. So one begins to ascend by taking from the Kedusha and from the Klipa, and it constantly takes more, but in the right blend to maintain his independence, and thus he grows until he takes 100% from one and 100% from the other, from both sides, and then he becomes complete. And that's Gmar Tikkun, the end of correction. When he used all the attributes of the Creator and all the attributes of the creature in order to build himself. So the thought of creation to delight his creatures shouldn't just give us a big will to receive and or corrected kelim or help correcting them. It should build in us a situation where we are independent, know where we are, how to take from these two systems what we need, how to correct one through the other. The correction, well, it's not that I need these big kelim of the impure system, or I don't need these holy forces from the pure system, but in between them I build my understanding, my consciousness, my kelim, my understanding in the thought of creation itself. Had I identified myself with any one system, I would not understand anything by being between them, by discriminating between them, between light and darkness. I study through the collision of these two forces. I study in how I learn through their collisions. this difference, that's what teaches me. I always learn in the contact between pleasure and lack, between light and darkness, in the contrast, in the border. That's where my sensation is. It is only at the entrance, when one enters the other. That's why what I learn out of this collision between these two contradicting systems is precisely by that I study the thought of creation. That's how I attain the Creator. Item 11. The will to receive is necessarily created in the Ne'etzal because of the will to bestow in the Ma'atzil, and it is the kli in which the Ne'etzal receives his Shefa. 11. This is what the Rav had said. In the beginning, an upper simple Or had filled the entire reality. Since the Creator contemplated upon delighting the creations, and the O expanded from him and came out from before him, the will to receive his pleasures was seemingly imprinted in him at once. You can also determine that this Ratzon, desire, is the full measure of the expanding O, light. In other words, the measure of his O and Shefa, abundance, is as the measure of his desire to delight, no more and no less. For that reason, we call the essence of that will to receive that is imprinted in this O through the power of his thoughts by the name place. For instance, when we say that a person has a stomach big enough to eat a pound of bread, while another cannot eat more than half a pound of bread. Which place are we talking about? It is not the size of the intestines, but the measure of appetite. You see that the measure of the place for of the reception of the bread depends on the measure of the desire to eat. It is all the more so in spirituality, where the desire to receive the Shefa, the abundance, is the place of the Shefa. And the Shefa is measured by the intensity of the desire. So the Ratzon, the desire, is the measurement tool. There is nothing else that can measure. That is why the thought of creation, his desire to do good to his creations, how much does he want to do good to us? Exactly to the extent that he wanted to delight us, he created the Ratzon in the Dalad Prinot de Orishal. The expanding light is called Prinat Shosh. The desire to bestow is called Prinat Shosh, and the desire that was created is called Prinat Aleph. Which desire? Exactly according to Prinat Shosh. Not more, not less. And the thought of creation to delight his creatures is the thoughts. The thought of creation. It necessitates the creation of a big desire, huge desire. What's a huge desire? One that is exactly equivalent to the light that the Creator created. What quantity are we talking about? We're not talking about a quantity, we're talking about a quality. If the will to receive is completely filled up with light that created it, it feels the state of Ein Sof, no limit. Everything is filled up. It might be a very small kli, or it might be a huge kli that it is filled, and both feel Ein Sof if there's no limit. Sof is a limit, an end. So we never talk about the quantity. We talk about a qualitative attainment, where I have a desire. In this desire, let's say I have 10 grams of a desire. It doesn't matter how much, but what I feel, the desire is not in the quantity, it is in the desire, in the depth of it. The deeper I feel it, and the deeper I attain it. In its depth, I seemingly feel, in its depth, the layers of the desire to enjoy. Shorosh Aleph Bet Gimel Dalet. And when I enjoy all the way, it is, that's in the quality, yes? That's the state of Ensof, no end. I feel no limitation on the part of the light that fulfills me. This is called no end of reception of pleasure. If that's what we say, then from here we can deduce that the thought of creation to delight his creatures, that thought of creation must create a desire that will enable me to feel flawless pleasure, where the more my senses evolve, the more they evolve, I will feel in all of them, in my complete attainment, that I'm completely fulfilled and there is no flaw, no blemish, no lack there. That's called Ein Sof, no end. So in the wisdom of Kabbalah, we always talk about qualitative discernments, not quantitative ones. Always. All there is Eser Sfirot, 10 Sfirot. But if we talk about the depth of the sensation in them, we divide them into an inner ten, and this way and that way. Why? Because we talk about the depth of the discernment, the sensation, the profoundness of it. Yes. Continuing to read, item 12. The will to receive, contained in the thought of creation, brought him out of his atzmut to acquire the name Ein Sof. Now you can see how Ein Sof departed from his atzmut, in which we cannot utter any word, and became defined by the name Ein Sof. It is because of this above discernment that in that all there is the will to receive incorporated in it from his atzmut. This is a new tzura form that is not at all in his atzmut. For whom would he receive from? This tzura form is the full measure of this O. He went over it too quickly. Not you. Parasalam. We have the thought of creation, meaning the light that wants to create the kli. It builds the kli. Krina Aleph of the will to receive. This desire that we have comes from the light itself. That is why we don't talk about the kli. Here we still have a ray of light, and on it there's a desire that begins to formulate. It's a sensation from within the light itself. After that, that desire begins to feel the light in it that comes from the giver and wants to resemble the giver. That desire, that's desire one and that's desire two. So that desire to bestow, that will to bestow, also comes from the light. It gives the sensation of itself. So we have the light that comes, on top of it we have the first layer, which is the first will, and on top of it we have another layer that's called the second will. And that's how this light expands. We have one clothing and then another clothing. These two clothes come directly from the light itself. Why? Because in the lights we have pleasure expressed here, yes, pleasure. And in the light itself, we have a sensation of the giver of the pleasure. The giver. From which comes the other desire. Everything comes from the lights. The first and the second, both desires are incorporated in this. So here ends the operation of the lights. These two properties in the lights, it realized them, the first and the second. Now we have a result of that, of the two of them, where that desire begins to want to do something by itself. He says this, I consist of a will to receive and I consist of a will to bestow. What do I want more? So now it begins to think. This intermediate stop is called the third desire. And from within it, from within that stop, a fourth desire is created. This fourth desire is its own desire. It's when it decided that it wants to receive. And these are all clothes over the light, over the oh. A third desire and then say a fourth desire. That's how the light comes and robes itself. When this fourth desire comes that it wants to receive, what is the difference between that and the first desire? The difference between them is that here it's a desire that comes from the creature, and this is a desire that comes from the emanator, from the creator. So the creator seemingly created Prina Aleph, but Prina Aleph was still not a creature. It came out of the creator and is controlled by the creator. But here there's already a sensation inside the desire that it is alone, it is independent. That is why when it continues further, it begins to feel like Prina Bet. I want... Yes, what did Prina Bet say? I want to be a giver. Why? Because I feel the giver. I feel the giver. This fourth Prina felt the giver. When it felt it, it didn't feel it with respect to the will to receive that came to it from the giver. It felt the giver the second force with respect to its own force, its own will to receive. And that created the shame. The difference, the gap between these two sensations is called shame, because the will to receive comes from herself. She's ashamed. If I was born this way, then, you know, they tell me, go to the craftsman who made me, yes, because if I have some properties and I cannot change them, I say, what do you want, guys? That's me. What can I do? It's my nature. And we see that we do not blame a person for not being able to change things. That's how he was born. But if he can change it, that's where we judge him, sentence him. So we sentence him for the lack of correction that depends on him. Here, Prina Dalet feels that she's not corrected, and that depends on her. Therefore, the shame brings her to Tzimtzum Aleph, the first restriction. The sensation that I must depart from Kabbalah, from reception. Why? Because I receive, I want to receive. If I did not want to receive, it would not be forbidden. We learn in part 2 of Talmud HaSasviot, an example from the Talmud, from the Gemara, where if a person goes next to a place of a prohibited place, or if he opens his eyes and sees something that is forbidden, in other words, uses his vessels of reception and enjoys for himself, if his desire is not his, in other words, it is the first time that he sees it, he was directed from above to something, it is not called a sin. A sin is the second time. When the Creator is desired from above, as here in Bchina Aleph, and he uses it again, yes, from himself, from Bchina Dalet, that's called a sin. That's why we have to understand that a creature is measured according to the understanding, to the sensation of his desire, to the sensation of his independence, of his contradiction with the Creator. There cannot be a creature without a Creator, only if one is opposite the other. One opposite the other. Then we can talk about the system of Creator and creature. If we are in the dark, and there is some barrier between them, then we can't talk about having a creature. There is no creature. In that case, there is no creature. So we can only talk about a creature provided the Creator is open to him, disclosed. So Bchina Dalet, the minute it feels the emanator, the Creator, and that he gives, it doesn't have a choice. It performs the restriction because it immediately feels its will to receive and its oppositeness from the Creator. He writes that the will to receive is imprinted in the lights. So where is the light made? What comes before what? Is a light being prepared in the desire, or first is there a light and then how can there be a light without a desire? There's no such thing. I don't know how to draw it, it's impossible. But if we say that, let's say there wasn't a light first, and there begins to be a light. What does it mean there begins to be a light? It means that here begins, Rav is writing, begins a desire. That's why the light begins to appear. There has to be a viut in the light so that we can say that it's a light. If you hadn't placed a limit, a border, a partition on the way of the light, you would not feel its existence. See, a ray of light goes into a room, you see these tiny particles of dust in the air. If the dust hadn't been there, you would not feel the light as existing. The light shines when it hits something, when it is encounters something, when it is distorted by something. Otherwise, you can't discern it as light. A light is the sensation of the receiver. In itself, we cannot say about any phenomenon, anything. We only talk about what's between them, about the limit, the border between them. So when we talk about the expanding light, say from Ketel, it is called clothing in the desire. So why do we say that the essence of the will to receive is imprinted in this light? This light imprints the will to receive, it creates the will to receive. What does it mean that the essence of the will to receive, the essence of the will to receive being imprinted in the light, means that the Creator did something called creation, existence from absence. And this act is called the act of creation. Other than that, there's nothing. Everything else comes from that. That is why he's called Creator. That's why here begins he is the Creator and the act of creation. And before that, it's only Atzmuto, his essence. What's the difference between him writing that the light is imprinted in the will to receive, or that the will to receive is imprinted in the light? Why does he write it this way and that way? It depends on how he speaks, or toward whom. The will to receive incorporated in the light, that speaks from the perspective of the Creator, as if the light is his thought to delight his creatures, and the will to receive is contained in it, it's inside it. So the light comes in order to develop the will to receive, but for the time being, the will to receive is in it, like in on a vehicle. Yes, it develops it. Or we say that the will to receive is clothing the light. That's the light inside, and that's the will to receive. And the will to receive becomes a clear clothing on it. It's not that the light develops it, but once it develops it, it becomes a vessel of reception for the lights, a vessel of perception. So he doesn't say how two opposites stem from the whole. No, he didn't tell you how they come. They come through the sensation of shame of the host. The host appears before the creature as the origin of the pleasure and the giver of the pleasure. He shows me his personality along with the pleasure. Why don't you say that back in Prinat Shosh, we get the will to receive the light? Here in the lights, we have Prinat Shosh, otherwise, it is right there, but it is just contained in the light, it doesn't show its operation. So we might say this: here there is a light and the will to receive is inside it. And here there is a light and the will to receive clothes it, robes it. It's how the will to receive manifests. Couldn't follow the question. Let's not talk about annihilation of our matter. In corporeality, there is collision between two kinds of matters or forces, and they annul each other. So we get energy as a result, and we don't see what happens afterwards. But what really happens, we can see in spirituality. There is no annihilation. We don't get zero in the end. There's no such thing as something disappearing. It just changes its form. In spirituality, we see that if two opposite forces meet, encounter, through them, a common third force is built, where we can see how they sustain each other. Precisely because they are opposite, they procreate a unification through the Masach, and there's a will to receive and an aim to bestow. They both exist, and thus we have a Kli on a different quality. But that Kli exists by two contradicting things. There's no annihilation. It's on the contrary. One sustains the other. That's in spirituality. In corporeality, they neutralize each other. And the third form that comes out of them seemingly disappears or is concealed. But we understand that there's no such thing as something disappearing. Yes. Can you say that seeking for spirituality is anything that I do not attain? Why? Oh, any desire that I reject, if I rejected its spirituality, why? Someone tells me, let's dance. Do I want to dance now? No. Is this spirituality? So, the definition of spirituality, let's not run away from the definitions. Bala Sulam gives them to us, and we learn that without some understanding of what they tell us, we have we cannot reach any understanding or definition by ourselves. Spirituality is called giving. There are many things in the world that I do not want, although they belong to reception. Yes. How is a term of Atzmuto, his essence? Say, a fish doesn't ask who feeds me. Why? Because it's not supposed to attain it. But I heard a joke about fish asking if there's a creator or not, who changes the water in the aquarium. We say that a person asks that question because there's a route for a Kli that will attain the answer to the question, who feeds me or to whom do I delight? That's why fish are not called creatures, except man, with a desire to receive, and next to it, a point in the heart, who feels these two opposite things, by which he can grow. That's the beginning of the creature. The beginning of the soul. The soul is the creature, neshama. When there's a will to receive, and on top of it, the aim to bestow, these two opposite things. One comes from the light and the other from the Creator himself, who is the giver. That's the creature. The sensation of the difference from the Creator. The sensation of shame. Now, if there's a term Atzmuto, his essence, how can it be unattainable? If there's a question about it, if it exists on some level, even if it's just a word. Now, we say that there's a term Atzmuto, that we have no question or answer about it, not for, not against. Because all the things that you say that they are not, through this not existing and that not existing and this not existing, in the end you create its image. So, we should only say that there is someone who relates to us. So there is his attitude to us. And that attitude is called Creator in the thought of creation. These are two phases of relating to us. Let's look at it schematically, not as something that we take as is. Atzmuto, Creator, the thoughts of creation. What is the difference? Atzmuto is unattained. We don't attain it. It is detached from us. The Creator already relates to us. And the Creator has the thought of creation to delight His creatures. We say that He is good, benevolent. The thought of creation is its upshot, yes? That's delighting His creatures. His creatures. I was writing, delighting His creatures. That's it. So we have discernments. And the thought of creation to delight His creatures. From that we get an act. The act of creation. Yes. So why, when Baal HaSalam writes that in his Atzmut there is no thought or perception whatsoever, why does it not mean that he gives it a name? He cannot name it because it is unattainable. Why is the sentence not a name? It's a definition. That which we do not attain, we do not define by a name. So that's the definition. Look, the Creator is benevolent. How do we attain that He is benevolent? He has got a desire to give us, to do good to us, to His creations. We must build the kli, our kli, to be exactly like, to be match His giving, to match His desire to delight His creatures. As He gives me, so I give Him. So I come precisely to that degree of delighting His creatures, the thought of creation. How? By through operations of the Creator on me. When I attain the thought of creation to delight His creatures, after that I begin to find the benevolent Himself. Who is the benevolent? Not His thoughts for me, but how He Himself is benevolent. It is divided into good and doing good. The Rav wrote, good and doing good. These are seemingly two forms within that. The good is good in itself. I attain Him as such. But I say, He is good. When I say that He does good, benevolent, that's toward me. The thought of creation is to reach through the operations of the Creator on me to come to a state where I'm completely where I completely identify with the thought of creation to delight His creatures. I learn all His ways to delight His creatures. By that I begin to understand that doing good, and within that I feel I attain the good. It's an even deeper attainment. But why am I saying this? Above the good, I have no attainment. So the question is, why does he even think that there's something above the good? Why should there be anything above the good? That's it. The good is it. After that, we go home. God says, I'll tell you. By a Kabbalist attaining the good that does good, within that attainment, there is another attainment. That there is an even inner discernment without a connection to them. Only that. That the good that does good, the benevolent, is toward them. But deeper in attainment through the Creator that they attain that there is something that doesn't relate to them. It is not good. you can't even discern if it's good or not good. It doesn't belong to you. It's not aimed at you. But it is attained in what? In that we don't attain it. That's why it's called Atzmuto, his essence. There's no hold in it in any way. In your kelim, there is nothing that you can grip it. But you attain that you do not have anything to grip it with. It's an attainment. In which kli? In the kli that you can attain, and in that in your kli you can attain, and outside the kli you cannot attain. Yes, outside the kli. You filled up your kli with opening me, inner light. There are no more surrounding lights. None. That's it. No more surrounding light. Everything is inside. There is no sensation that there is something outside you on this level that you attained. You've reached a level where all the lights that were here as surroundings have now come inside, and they're in your kli. You have an infinite kli with complete correction, and that's it. So what else is there? Now you begin to feel. Here you had a sensation of the Om Makif. The kli was here, the sensation of the Om Makif was there. That's the opening. You could feel the outside and the inside. Here you come to feel that there's nothing on the outside, but when there's nothing on the outside, you attain that negation as Atzmuto, as his essence. You attain that there's something that's not connected to you in whatsoever. That everything that did relate to you, that's the creator, the thought of creation, is all inside you already. We won't find the words for it. It's just philosophy. Go on. Continuing to read. This is all questions. It's not going to help us. Item 13. Prior to the Tzimtzum, the Shinui Tzura was not discernible in the will to receive. In his almightiness, this new Tzura was would not have been defined as a change from his all. This is the meaning of the words before the world was created, there were He is one and His name one. He indicates the O and Sof, and His name implies the place which is the will to receive from His Atzmut, contained in the O and Sof. He tells us that He is one and His name one. His name is Malchut, then Sof, being the Ratzon, namely the will to receive that has been engraved in the entire reality that was contained in the thought of creation prior to the Tzimtzum. Before the Tzimtzum, it is not considered that there is any change and differentiation between him and his all. And the place they are one and the same. If there had been any difference and shortcoming in the place compared to the O and Sof, then there would certainly be two b'chinot here. Questions. What does it mean that the change is discernible or indiscernible? The change being discernible or indiscernible relates to the receivers. Everything we speak of in the wisdom of Kabbalah relates to the receivers. The creature determines if there is a difference between itself and the creator or not. That is why we have many people in this world. They do horrible things, perhaps. It is not considered that they do something. They don't feel themselves as creatures. When does one commit a sin? When does one do something that's called a sin? When one feels the Creator, either openly or in hiding, it doesn't matter how, and operates in a way that is not directed toward coming closer to Him. That's a sin. All the other operations, that's the rest of the world. If it is not connected to the Creator, it is not called a creature, it is not called doing anything. If we look at what happens in the world this way, then we see the world not as we, as normal people do. Now we don't treat the people of the world as doing anything, but the nature in them burns in them and pushes them to all kinds of actions, terrible actions. But it's all coming from a system of impurity. It's not that it's a result of the creature who chose it, who engaged in it, who raised it, who aimed at using it this way. No. That's why it says the heart of angels and ministers and kings is in the hands of God. That's why we say that the entire world are puppets, and none of them performs any independent actions because they have no free choice. After one comes to a state, after several thousand years, and one comes to a state where, besides his own desire, the point awakens in one too, then he determines, according to the introduction to Talmud HaSasurot, which item? Item 2 or 3? Or 4? No. Then Bala Sulam says that he has a choice to strengthen himself in what he feels right now, that the Creator places one's hand on the good fortune and says, take this for yourself. He got the direction from the Creator, and now you can say if he's doing something good or not, because he chooses a good fate or not. Item 4. I wrote it. Item 4. And if not that, then he is a complete beast. And he's not obliged, he's not sentenced. Yes? He's just being beaten in torment through all the situations of development. And if he doesn't choose to enhance the point of the heart, then he is continued to be beaten through torments until he notices the difference between the his desire and the point in the heart. His desire is the egoistic desire, that's the ego. And the point in the heart draws him to the Creator. And he must choose between them. So we must understand how to relate to the world. The whole world is still. There's nothing to receive them. There's nothing to relate to there. We cannot criticize people. They are in their desires. The Creator operates them. He brings them to the situation until they see the point of the heart. And then they'll start to work somehow. But before they have a point in the heart, it is a will to receive per se without any will to bestow. The will to receive is Malchut. The will to bestow is Bina. When one has Malchut and Bina, we can talk about some kind of cooperation and correction. But if all he has is a will to receive, Malchut, 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 constantly Malchut. What can you talk about? Who can you ask? He is completely subordinate to the Creator. Completely. And in the upper worlds too, it is the control of the will to receive. When one rises in the upper worlds, in the pure and impure systems, it is also the dominion of the Creator in both places, completely. Complete dominion of the Creator. Only a person who ascends, as we said, through these forces, makes himself independent. Makes himself independent. So the higher one climbs, the more he is demanded. That's why they say that the Creator is meticulous with the righteous on even a hair's breadth. So, who is the Creator dealing with? From whom does he demand? And who does he want? Only those who develop both Malchut and Bina. These are the attributes of Bina, and those are the attributes of Malchut. Yes. I'm trying to understand. Where am I in this midline? Who am I? In that midline, you are the one who takes from the Creator the two kinds of forces, the will to receive and the will to bestow, and makes of them similarity, semblance to the Creator, something that resembles the Creator. A form that you make of the will to receive, the form of the giver. You look at the Creator and say, oh, so that's what he does. I use my will to receive to do the same. Like a child learns. The Creator did this way. So I will also do that with my will to receive. And then you copy it from the Creator, from the right line, all the forms of the substance in the left line, and then give that substance an outer form of the Creator. The image of the Creator. So who are you? You are the right line? No, that's the attributes of the Creator. You're the left line? No, that's the substance that the Creator that will to receive. So who are you? You're the sculptor, the one who made it. So who are you? You are something that didn't exist before in creation at all. You have to understand that point. It didn't exist before. It didn't come out of the Creator. It is someone who now, in the midline, is born, was made from zero. And in this work, created himself, so to speak, and improved himself to the level of the Creator, through the level of the Creator. So by the Creator giving you the substance in the forms, he brings you he gives you an opportunity to make yourself like him from zero. He just gives you the preparations. And by growing this way, you will see that you are completely independent. Completely. Even in your point of exit, you do not belong to the Creator, seemingly. You understand? That's how he departed himself from touching you, in order to eventually give you the sensation of eternity, perfection, as he has, so that there will be no blemish in it, where you seemingly owe him, you are dependent on him. It's a subtle point. It's hard to express it in words. But look at what happens by being in the middle line. And in these two forces that come from the Creator, the Kedusha and the Tum'ah, the impurity and the purity, the purity and impurity respectively, both of them do not belong to you. You are what's in the middle line. Yes. And that's how we should relate to our nature. So I don't have to hate myself because of my impure forces, yes, my bad attributes, or my pure forces. I don't have to beat myself up over it. I have to relate to these things creatively only. Otherwise, yes, if I submerge in these bad forces, it's called a fool sits and eats of its own flesh. Yes. Or if I identify only with the forces of Kedusha, it might be called recklessness or lightheadedness. I have to relate to these two influences as coming from the same origin, completely equal. Impure system, pure system, it's the act of the Creator on me. There's no one to hate except myself. By if He gives me the good fortune, if He places my hand, yes, have I done it or not? That's all. Also, if it doesn't work out after the great effort, not before the effort, if I tried my hardest and see that it didn't come out, then I should say that it was directed this way from out the outside to bring me even more of youth on the left line. Continue. Item 14. Tzimtzum means that Malchut diminished the will to receive in her. Then the O disappeared because there is no O without a Kli. 14. Regarding the Tzimtzum, the will to receive that is contained in the O and Sof, called Malchut and Sof. Now it's changing the battery. Tzimtzum means that Malchut diminished the will to receive in her. Then the O disappeared because there was no O without a Kli. 14. Regarding the Tzimtzum, the will to receive that is contained in O and Sof, which contains the entire creation, which is the thought of creation, and which contains the entire creation, embellished herself to ascend and equalize her Tzuah with his Atzmut. She therefore diminished her will to receive his Shefa in Prina Daled, in the Ratzon, the desire. Her intention was that by so doing the Olamot would emanate and be created down to Olam Hazeh, this world. Thus, the Tzurah of the will to receive would be corrected and returned to the Tzurah of bestowal. And that would bring her to Hishtavut Tzurah, equivalence of form, with the Ma'atzil. Thus, after she had diminished the will to receive, the O naturally departed, for it is known that the O depends on the Ratzon, and the Ratzon is the place of the O, for there is no coercion in spirituality. Questions? Beginners, I'm not asking. Yes, New York. They fell asleep. Quickly.
Mm-hmm.
couldn't understand it, obviously. What do you mean? Why wasn't the kli broken? I don't understand the question.
За счет чего в системе подъема кли не происходит разбиение? И там есть сила.
Okay, now I got it. A piece of the sentence was missing. Why does a kli that ascends in the degrees until Gmar Tikkun isn't broken? Because the kli is given additional additional will to receive from the left line only as much as it acquires the force of the masach from the right side, and not more. It's called raising in sanctity and not lowering in sanctity. So the kli ascends to the right line first, then from the right line goes out to the left line to the will to receive. From the will to receive, it takes as much as possible what it can in order to join it with the middle right line, and from the left line then comes back to the right line. So it never turns out in the wisdom of Kabbalah that a person will fail in his work. He might have situations where he has a big ovyut and cannot exit it, but it's not a breaking. It's a time when he has to immerse himself in spirituality in order to afterwards correct it. Where does it come from? It comes from a person operating according to the Rishimot of the breaking. Yes, in the breaking of the vessels, all the Rishimot fell, and the person performs them from the purest Rishimot to the thickest Rishimot. And the Rishimot that came out of the breaking bring a person to the opposite of the breaking. If the breaking was by the left line overcoming the right line, now the correction is the right line always overpowering the left line. And the more one is able to correct his first left line, in that he advances. He always operates with his weaker hand, yes, the left hand. The corrections are always on the left line. Do you have another question, or do you just have that question mark for no reason? New York.
No.
Well? Why don't we hear them, guys? Again.
Является ли выход из системы клипот выбором Тиферет?
The middle line, the middle third of Tiferet, is acquired by a constant collision between the vessels of reception and the vessels of bestowal. And the result of it is that we build the middle third of Tiferet. And we build it by relating Klipat Noga, that's what it's called, the Noga shell. Relating it to the vessels of bestowal, to Atzilut. It's called Achab de Elyon, or Achab de Aliyah, sorry. Raise the Achab. Let's drop it. Let's continue. Otherwise, too much talk. Continuing to read chapter 3, explanation of the origin of the Neshama. Item 15. Now we shall explain the issue of the origin of the Neshama. It has been said that she is a part of God above. We asked, how and in what does the Tzura of the Neshama differ from his O Pashut that separates her from everything? We can now understand that there is really a great Shinui Tzura in her. although he contains all the conceivable and imaginable forms, still, after the above words, you find one surah that is not contained in him, namely the surah of the will to receive. For whom would he receive from? However, the neshamot, whose creation came about because he wanted to delight them, which is the thought of creation, were necessarily carved with this law of wanting and yearning to receive his shefa. This is where they differ from him, because their tzorah is different from his. It has already been explained that a corporeal essence becomes separated and divided by the force of motion and remoteness of location. However, the spiritual essence becomes separated and divided by shinui tzorah. The measure of shinui tzorah determines the measure of the distance between one another. If the shinui tzorah becomes completely opposite from one end to the other, then they are completely severed and separated and can no longer suck from one another, for they are regarded as alien to one another. Again, item 15. Now you will understand the issue of the origin of the neshama. It has been said that she is a part of God above. We asked, how and in what does the tzuah of the neshama differ from his opashuts that separates her from everything? We can now understand that there really is a great shinui tzuah in her. Although he contains all the conceivable and imaginable forms, still, after the above words, you find one tzuah that is not contained in him, namely the tzuah of the will to receive, for whom would he receive from? However, the neshamot, whose creation came about because he wanted to delight them, which is the thought of creation, were necessarily carved with this law of wanting and yearning to receive his shefa. That is where they differ from him, because their tzuah is different from his. It has already been explained that a corporeal essence becomes separated and divided by the force of motion and remoteness of location. However, the spiritual essence becomes separated and divided by shinui tzuah. The measure of shinui tzuah determines the measure of the distance between one another. If the shinui tzuah becomes completely opposite from one end to the other, then they are completely severed and separated, and one can no longer suck from one another, for they are regarded as alien to one another. The nature of the Creator is bestowal. The nature of the creature is reception. There is nothing that contradicts them more. These are two complete antipodal properties. There is nothing but these two attributes. The will to receive and the will to bestow. There is nothing else. The Creator doesn't have a will to receive. The creature doesn't have a will to bestow. To begin with, they are opposites. The thought of creation comes afterwards to delight his creatures, de facto. First of all, the origin of the soul is operated. What is that? It is how contradicting the art of the Creator. That's what we have to find first. If we talk about necessary operations, then these are the operations. First we evolve without cognizance and consciousness. Afterwards, conscious development. Who we are, yes, who I am, what I am, the receiver. That's already provided, I feel myself, according to the giver. Here I don't feel anything. Here I feel myself according to the giver. It's called one concealment and then another one, double and single. And then I start correcting myself. The receiver must acquire an intention. It's the intention that I start acquiring on myself. That's the correction. That's called recognition of evil, and that's the correction. All in all, we can ask, we can divide our reality, not ask, divide our reality into three parts. The first time, the second time, and the third period, actually. In the first period, we're like any animal and beast in this world. We are completely controlled by the Creator, by existing entirely within our will to receive. What comes to me from above, that's what I keep. I go to a movie, I go to I don't know, a soccer game, I go to a bar, I work, I travel, I do what my will to receive tells me. These are the corporal desires, the physical desires. That begins in the physical desires and ends in the desires for knowledge. Rav keeps getting the spelling wrong in the word knowledge. So then when I begin to learn, yes, that's my point in the heart that begins to awaken. The point in the heart begins to awaken. I start checking myself through the study. And from here on, I am no longer considered a beast or just a human. I start developing my point in the heart. The point of the heart is not one dominion of the Creator, it is two dominions, two authorities. It's the authority of the Creator, yes, through the will to receive. And here, it is the authority of the Creator through the will to bestow. It's also His authority. And through the study, I want of those two forms, I want the will to bestow to be greater than my will to receive. That's what I want to do. I get these two forms and I have to believe that they come to me equally, the will to receive and the will to bestow from the Creator. And when I equalize them and nurture them, I raise a request to the light that reforms, and in that I enhance my will to bestow. I increased it. It created the first kli in me. I start studying the wisdom of Kabbalah. This study is called preparation. And from here on begins the study of the wisdom of Kabbalah that we learn today, yes, in the essence of the wisdom of Kabbalah. At that time, I actually begin to study. That's the study de facto. And at that time, I know the spiritual world, and I see the forms and operations and forces and start learning in it like a child in this world, studies from the parents, from the society, from the environment that teach him and give him all kinds of means. So I begin to learn from my teacher, from his example, because he and I become are in the same world now. Say the creator, the teacher is in the world of Bria. That's the teacher of the teacher, and I. That's teacher, and I am also, say I rose to Olam Briya, Olam Yetzira, it doesn't matter. So we are in one world, we have a common language. So now I can learn from him, I can be guided by him. I can get an example. He can set an example for me. Before that, my study is only a preparation to have a masach, to be in the same world as my teacher. So the wisdom of Kabbalah begins from an understanding that a person is here. This is called the origin of the soul. The extent to which my soul is opposite from the Creator. The study of the origin of the soul. And afterwards, its correction. That's how he explains to us, bit by bit, gradually. Questions? Yes. How can I know that I'm here because the point of the heart awakened in me, or for another reason? How do I know if I have a point in the heart or not? Or maybe I'm here, as in with us, for another reason. You can't know. Because you are still trying to sort out between being in desires before the point in the heart, the physical desires, knowledge, power, honor, etc. These desires are still in you, and there's strong desires. Yes, they demand what they deserve, and there's a point in the heart. You want something that is seemingly detached from these desires, but it's still. You can't quite leave these desires and identify with that point. So, saying where you are now, in which desire you are, you can't really say that. In which direction you are, that's what you determine. It's called the Creator placing one's hand on the good fortune, as he wrote in item 4 in the introduction to Taz. He brought you to a place where you can develop your soul. That's the good fate. Just imagine that now you don't have a soul. The soul that the world speaks of is a vital force that any animal has. But a neshama they don't have. You take any person off the street, if he's alive or dead, it's the same thing. There's no soul in there. Now you're given a chance to develop a soul. That kli of the soul is in your hands. That's up to you to develop. It's not the Creator's doing. The Creator does things according to your request, according to your raising of man. Only that. So now you have a chance and you have a choice. He placed your hand on the good fortune and says, take this. What does it mean, take? He put you under conditions by which you can come to the eternal form, to create your soul, to create that click in which you enter and live in a spiritual and whole world. That's in your hands. From now on, it is all up to you. He can do nothing in your place. He can wake you up several times. If you react, fine. If you don't, you won't. It says this. If one sins and repeats it, it becomes permitted. Yes? If one commits a certain iniquity for the first time, it's not so bad. It just happened, all right. But if he does it a second time, they say, that's it. Now he wants to do it. It becomes permitted, meaning he is lowered to that degree of the iniquity, and then he's in it. So you shouldn't think that you shouldn't think about your situation where you are, because you will never know. You can only determine if you make an effort to realize the fate that the Creator had given you. So even when you're in spirituality, when you have consciousness and awareness and attainment, you will still have to relate to spirituality in such a way that everything depends on me. Without taking into account that the Creator gave you that situation and that He must have predetermined it and thought about what would happen in advance, that doesn't matter, all that. So we have only to determine the direction of the development. And where we are, it doesn't matter. Even in my worst situation, according to my feeling and my intellect, how do I know that it is so? Because in every situation I am in, it doesn't matter where you are, if you take any situation in life, you're forbidden to think what you had before. That situation happened in me because in the past I did this, I did that. No, there's no such thing. It's all nonsense. It'll never be true. Correct. You have to cut yourself off from the past. You just have to say this. The Creator is this way because the Creator the situation is this way because the Creator arranged it this way. Why? I don't know. There are a thousand reasons. It's not going to help me. This situation came to me from above. That situation is called a desire. The recognition of this desire, the consciousness of it, also comes from above. I was asking how to spell consciousness in Hebrew. So that also comes from above. They both come from above. So what do I have to do? The fact that the Creator gave me a desire, that's minus, and the consciousness, that's a plus. By that, by so doing, He gave me a choice. Now I have to gain strength, acquire it, and advance toward the true state. In what? In the middle line. The middle line. That's it. Only in that do we have a choice, and only to that should we relate. If you say yesterday or tomorrow, that's not your zone. Because He always gives you two forces, two discernments, opposites in your thought and desire. And if you start handling them and start, I don't know, dealing with them, that's not your business. These are His systems. Detach yourself from anything that is not connected to you, and then when you look at what depends on you, you'll see a tiny point that depends on the direction of your thoughts. And Baal HaSulam brings this act in his first article in Shamati. He says, there is none else beside Him. In other words, where does one begin? By constantly developing himself in the thoughts. There is none else beside him. Everything comes from above. Everything from before me is the Creator, and everything from behind me is the Creator. And only now, the present point, depends on my direction. And that decision begins with, there's none else beside him. In that, I clean up the place for choice.
Manhattan.